Good evening, everyone. This is Goth Nerd Revelations with me, your host, Goth Nerd. And tonight, I wanted to talk about several things, but starting off, I had just recently had a conversation with a group of friends of mine and realized that, one thing that's actually very interesting is how many different universes and how many different sort of franchises the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles are connected to. For example, one thing, and I've gone over this many times in many different episodes, one thing that's fairly obvious because this character has been featured in pretty much all of the Ninja Turtle cartoons. He has his own comic book series, which is separate from the Ninja Turtles, but they have had several crossovers, within the comic books as well. And like I said, so the first example I'm talking about is, Usagi Yojimbo. The both universes cross over with each other fairly, often, both creators, because the creator of Usagi Yojimbo is Stan Sakai, and then the creators of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, when I can say it, that is both Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird, and they were. They had met Stan Sakai during the early days of when both Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird were pitching their comic book Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and was, you know, selling it independently. As clear back as the mid-80s, Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird were friends with Stan Sakai, and, as I said, there were several different crossovers that they did with Usagi Yojimbo, one thing, for those not familiar, I mean, I would hope you would be, but, if you were, tuning into the show, but if you're not, it's okay, I can explain it to you. As I said, Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird were famously known for their creation, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, that this one has become a huge, huge franchise. Most people know usually who the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles are because there have been several different films. There has been many different TV series, but it started out as a comic book. It was a black and white comic book, started coming out in 1984, and in fact, famously started what was at the time known as the black and white boom, because there were a lot of, during the time when Ninja Turtles came out, there were several different comics that were doing black and white stuff. One that had been going on slightly prior to that had been the comic book Cerebus from David Sims. But Ninja Turtles was the one that kind of popularized the whole black and white comic thing, because most comics at that point were done in color. The only ones that were not done in color, and this is because they usually keep these separate, is the newspaper strips that you would read within your local newspaper. But that was considered to be a separate thing. But for what we know as comic books, all comic books were usually done in color. And you didn't really have a whole lot of black and white titles. Like I said, there was Cerebus several years prior to Ninja Turtles, but but really it was Ninja Turtles that kind of popularized that whole black and white sort of comic book where you didn't really have the color attached to it. There had been, as I said, a few outliers, because as I said, I did mention Cerebus, but then also there were some foreign comics that were done in black and white, because you had Japanese manga, which always is done in black and white, and then there were a few Italian comics, and some and a few outliers in terms of magazines. But as I said, it wasn't a big normal thing. Most comic books were usually done in color. But as I said, Ninja Turtles kind of literally popularized many titles doing black and white. As I said, there were outliers here and there, but at least here in the United States, this is when it kind of blew up and became a big thing. Anyway, pretty much getting back to what I was talking about. But yeah, and Ninja Turtles is a group of turtle human hybrids, mutants. What had happened was, once again, this is just for those not familiar, and it's okay for those who aren't. They were mutated by a vat of ooze that had broken open and fallen into the sewer, and the ooze mutated them along with their teacher, a rat named Splinter, who was actually originally a pet to a ninja slash kung fu master by the name of Fumato Yoshi. And Fumato Yoshi had immigrated to New York from Japan, and what happened was he used to be part of a ninja clan known as the Foot. But what had happened was Hamato Yoshi basically had got had become rivals with a ninja by the name of Oroku Nagi. And they basically have a duel, and Hamato Yoshi wins and kills Oroku Nagi. Well, what Hamato Yoshi didn't know was that Oroku Nagi had a little brother by the name of Oroku Saki. And Oroku Saki, basically, when finding out that his brother was killed by Hamato Yoshi, regardless of the fact that it was done in an honorable duel, he vowed vengeance and wanted to kill and destroy not only Hamato Yoshi but everything that was important to him. But then also, Oroku Saki craved power, because Hamato Yoshi was next in line to be the successor who would control the Foot Clan. Oroku Saki basically had tried to kill Hamato Yoshi unsuccessfully. Hamato Yoshi, though, because there was a woman that he had fallen in love with who originally was supposed to be married to Oroku Nagi, Oroku Saki's brother. But she had fallen in love with Hamato Yoshi. Anyway, in order to protect her, because it had just come down to him and facing off against Orokozaki himself, he would have just done so. But because he wanted to protect her, what they did was he fled Japan, and moved both him and the woman that he loved to New York. Anyway, they were there for a few years without Orokozaki knowing, because he had been looking for him. But eventually, Orokozaki did track him down, and then he murdered Hamato-yoshi's bride. And what happened was Hamato-yoshi had come home from the job he was working, and what happened was Orokozaki, because ordinarily Hamato-yoshi would have been able to defeat Orokozaki, because Hamato-yoshi was actually much more skilled than he was. But what had happened was Orokozaki, because he didn't believe in fighting honorably, he just wanted revenge. He basically wasted no time, and because what had happened was Hamato-yoshi comes home, finds the girlfriend dead on the floor, and then Orokozaki just basically surprises him and kills him before Hamato-yoshi even has a chance to draw a weapon. Anyway, what had happened was, and this is where the rat comes in, is Splinter, his rat, was a large rat that Hamato-yoshi kept as a pet and had taken with him from Japan to the States. Anyway, when Hamato-yoshi was killed by Rokusaki, as he was falling over dying, he crashes against the cage that Splinter was in. Splinter escapes and basically flies out of the cage, latches on to Orokozaki's face and scars it up, and Orokozaki basically throws the rat to the floor, instead of killing it, interestingly enough, he basically just decides to slice off a part of its ear. And then flees the scene. Anyway, as I said, the mutagen falls on them, and Splinter is changed into a human rat hybrid. And as I said, the Ninja Turtles, who are babies at the time, are changed into human turtle hybrids. But what happened was Splinter was quite a bit older, because he had already lived many years with Hamato-yoshi. So what happened was Splinter was starting to notice that he was growing in intellect, and that you know and what was going on. But anyway, you had these sort of baby human turtle hybrids that didn't really know what they were doing. So what he did was he gathered them up, and then he basically decided to raise them, and then he trained them in the ways of martial arts, and also trained them how to use weapons, and basically to be ninjas. And 15 years later, the Ninja Turtles are just what's the name? They're Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And what happens is that and this was very prominent in the early comic books. If you grew up watching the Ninja Turtles cartoons, it's a little, well, not little, but it's different in the fact that, because you see the turtles a lot more often than at least was in the early comic books. Okay, they started kind of more mimicking sort of the more popular media at the time as the comic books went on. But when the comic books first started coming out, both Kevin Eastman and Pierre Laird were huge fans of Daredevil. And I'm not trying to dwell on this because I actually have an entire series of episodes. In fact, there's a huge three-parter that I suggest that you check out if you haven't, because I do have a whole, it goes over the entire career of both Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird, and I talk a lot about Ninja Turtles, but then I also talk about many of their other projects that they did in addition to Ninja Turtles. But anyway, so I'm just trying to briefly go over this. I mean, I've already rambled here for about 15 minutes, but anyway, trying to speed things up. But basically, once they all grow up, the turtles, I guess grow up into teenagers, the turtles basically, help to, basically fight enemies in the shadows of New York. And it's kind of a very dark, kind of very Frank Miller, inspired comic book. And it's actually quite violent. It's not the kid-friendly Ninja Turtles that you may know from the cartoon shows or the films. It's a lot more violent because, people are killed, because they're ninjas, okay? These are freaking flat-out ninjas. Now, moving on, it's another one that they cross over with frequently is, as I said, Usagi Yojimbo with Stan Sakai. And his story is the story of an anthropomorphic samurai rabbit who travels around ancient Japan, or at least his world's version of Japan. And is basically supposed to be based in the Japanese feudal period, and pretty much he's a Ronin who travels around and basically goes from village to village, basically looking for jobs and basically helping out people from bandits and thugs and even supernatural creatures, and it's actually interesting enough. It's drawn in this sort of almost cartoon-esque style, but interesting enough, it was a very adult comic book. Not in the fact that it's got anything like salacious or anything in it, but he clearly kills his enemies. He is a samurai rabbit, and as I said, he will slice heads off people. He'll stab them. He clearly kills his enemies. It's definitely not what I'd call a kid-friendly comic book. This is definitely something that you want your kid to at least be preteen to teen before you read, at least in terms of that. But you definitely want them to be older. You certainly do not want to be showing a samurai rabbit hacking heads off people to your 6-year-old. I can't decide what all parents do, but I would just definitely say that I personally wouldn't want to be showing that to young kids. That's the reason why it's a little bit more adult. It's just in terms of violence. As far as everything else, it's actually a little bit respectable. It doesn't curse, but then again, this is supposed to be based in the 14th century, 1500s esque sort of time period. It's at Japan's feudal period. And then also, it's, And it doesn't have, as I said, anything salacious or anything like that. It's just, as I said, the only reason what makes it adult, is the violence in it. Because yeah, like I said, he's a samurai rabbit who full on kills his enemies. So just as Usagi Yojimbo and Ninja Turtles cross over frequently. In fact, I would say that Usagi Yojimbo has been the comic book that Ninja Turtles has crossed over with the most. But as I said, it's because Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird were good friends with Stan Sakai. Probably because they both had similar origins. Started off working on on underground comics and stuff, and both it took both of them a few years before they had their big hit, because Stan Sakai had started out as Stan Sakai had started out as an assistant, working on Sergio Aragonés's Gru the Wanderer. He in fact did a lot of the lettering on that, and would like fill in inks and blacks and stuff, and eventually would do some fill-ins. Till one day Sergio Aragonés would one day he had seen Stan Sakai working on some stuff on his own, and eventually encouraged Stan Sakai to go off and do his own thing, which is when Stan Sakai went off to do Usagi Yojimbo. And just as to Kevin Eastman, Peter Laird, they had been trying many different comic book ideas prior to Ninja Turtles, but nothing was sticking. Nothing was getting really big because Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird had actually met each other around 1980, 1981, and had actually been working together for at least 2.5 to 3 years before they even got started on Ninja Turtles. And then once Ninja Turtles came out, it started gathering a big following, and then slowly but surely became this huge hit, which spawned TV series, video games, films, all sorts of merchandise. It just became a marketer's dream. As I said, Usagi Yojimbo became much more of a sort of underground hit. Unfortunately, Usagi Yojimbo never got the level of success that the Ninja Turtles did, but Usagi Yojimbo was, first off, had a loyal fan base, which followed it a lot, but also, because of the few times that he would be featured in Ninja Turtles media, because even when Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird became hugely popular with their Ninja Turtles thing, they never forgot who their friends were, and they would still feature Usagi Yojimbo in certain Ninja Turtles stuff, and so Stan Sakai did get at least a small level of success. I said it didn't reach the level that it did with Ninja Turtles, but he did get a small level of success, and he was able to maintain a good core fan base, which he's maintained throughout the years. In fact, Usagi Yojimbo was starting to get a little bit more and more noticed these days. Like I said, it's still not at that level yet. There's still people who don't know what it is, but it's at least much more recognized nowadays as a property than it was maybe, say, back in the 80s when it was first created. But anyway, yeah, that frequently crosses over, and they have this kind of I wouldn't say shared universe. What it comes down to is that the stories when they usually cross over is that Usagi Yojimbo is from a different dimension, according to that, and so, I guess you could kind of say they share the same universe, but it's like a alternate universe, but as they collaborate and cross over quite frequently. But this isn't the only thing that they have collaborated and crossover with. Ninja Turtles, even throughout the years, has crossed over into several different universes. Some officially, some unofficially. One that is kind of unofficial is that it does actually cross over into the Marvel Universe, and I'll tell you how it does. Because for what a lot of people don't know, that the vial of mutagen that broke open into the sewers and changed the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles into what they were, if you talk to Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird, what happened was, as I said, they were huge Daredevil fans, especially the Frank Miller run that he had done in the early 80s. And they were hugely inspired by that. As it goes, that vial that the turtles, I said, were changed by, well, that was also the canister that had broke open and blinded Matt Murdock, causing him to have his superhuman abilities. So. And I don't know if Marvel ever recognizes this as canon, but that's pretty much the story that Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird go with on that one. So I guess unofficially, the Ninja Turtles share the same universe with Daredevil, and then and now this one's official because it's an official crossover. And like I said, we'll briefly go over this one. Most people probably know who Daredevil is by either the TV series, or maybe you do follow the comic books. But I'll just try to briefly go over this as quickly as possible. Daredevil is a blind superhero, but he is able to fight villains, not only using all his, not only, you know, honing all his other skills, but the fact that what happens is when he got splashed by the chemicals on his eyes, they caused him to have what is known as sort of a radar sense, almost kind of like what bats have. And what happens is that while he may not be able to see anybody, what happens is that he can sort of see and trace sound. So if something makes a noise, he can usually see where it is and what's going on. And as I said, and then he's also really polished up all his other skills. He may not have his sight, but he's polished up his skills of smell, smell, touch, taste, everything else that that he has. And what happens is he's become this vigilante known as Daredevil, who basically fights in New York's Hell's Kitchen, and takes on crime lords like the Kingpin, takes on shadow groups like the Hand, which is this ninja group that works from the shadows, and in fact, once again ties in with Ninja Turtles and the fact that or you can see the homage there because in Daredevil you've got the ninja group called the Hand. In Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles they have the Foot, In Daredevil, Matt Murdock is trained by a character named Stick, and in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the turtle's master is Splinter. So, but anyway, and so yeah, but that's I said, but that's one war's unofficial was one that's actually and but anyway, but that's was but yeah, but that's Daredevil's universe. I've already went over Turtles universe, so I don't have to talk about that. But yeah, but their sort of crossover stuff is much more unofficial, because it's stuff that's hinted at, but not blatantly said. The only way you know for sure is basically there's several interviews with Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird where they talk about the influence that Daredevil has on Ninja Turtles and how it connects. But if you didn't know that, you probably wouldn't see it. So as I said, that's more completely unofficial. It's not like they actually have full-on crossover stories together. It just kind of fits into the universe, just through these kind of subtle things. One that's completely official, though, is they do have an official crossover with Marvel's rival company, DC, because the Ninja Turtles have crossed over with Batman. They famously have a Ninja Turtles a Batman crossover comic book. In fact, they've even had a few sequels to it. But what happens in this one is basically so which goes to kind of tell you that that somehow they've managed to make it to where Ninja Turtles and the Ninja Turtles and DC Universe are somehow connected. But basically what happens is that Shredder basically ends up working with the Joker, and they basically form this kind of shadow crime conglomerate together. Batman's trying to take it down, but also since the Ninja Turtles have been following Shredder, they want to take it down as well. At first, Batman looks at the Turtles as almost like nuisances. He feels like they're in the way. They're kids. What do they know? They're not, they're just gonna get in his way. He's gonna be Batman, and he's just gonna, do it the Batman way. But throughout the course of the story, he starts to soften up to the idea of teaming up because he realizes that they each have strengths that complement each other. And then they know they're villains. The Ninja Turtles are super familiar with Shredder and how he works. And Batman is not familiar with this, which is a disadvantage to him. But then it's vice versa with Batman's villain, the Joker. Batman knows how Joker works and how Joker does things. The Ninja Turtles are not familiar with this, so and they haven't had the time to study and figure it out. So anyway, the Ninja Turtles and Batman eventually do team up to take them both down, and then it results in because what's funny is Batman throughout the entirety of this just thinks that the turtles don't take anything seriously, but I mean they're teenagers, with maybe the exception of Leonardo, but they're teenagers and they do typical teenage things. But what happens is as Batman softens up to them and they finally do actually become, I guess, what you call somewhat friends, everything pretty much culminates in a pizza party at the end, because he basically has Alfred order up a bunch of pizzas And they basically all enjoy pizza together before the turtles basically go back home. And as I said, it's a really good story, and it's actually had a few sequels. I won't comment on the sequels because I've read the initial Batman Ninja Turtles crossover, but unfortunately, I haven't had the chance to read the sequels, so I'll have to get back to you on that once I have read the sequels. But I have read the initial Ninja Turtles Batman crossover. Plus, they actually have made an animated film version of it, so that's another good one to check out. And like I said, and the Ninja Turtles comic has been going many, many years. It's changed hands over different companies, and it originally would come out and was self-published by Mirage Studios. And then they once they got into the 90s, they made a deal with Image Comics. In fact, this is where it actually kind of they've crossed over into Image Comics continuity, because they made a deal with Image Comics, and in fact it has been crossed over with Eric Larson's Savage Dragon. But unfortunately, that is no longer considered canon, and they have basically deleted that catalog. And I can kind of see why. Now, the Ninja Turtles run over at Image initially started out really cool, but a lot of things got changed and a lot of continuity got ruined because, I mean, you just had this, they had all these weird stories about, I mean, they're, you know, the This is a story where I believe I can't remember if it's Leonardo or Donatello, but one of those two. Please forgive me, it's been a while since I've read these ones, but one of the two ends up getting killed. Raphael goes crazy and becomes this and becomes this sort of super villain. It just gets into this weird wacky area. Splinter gets killed, and it just goes all these weird and wacky places and just kind of ruins the continuity. And so, because of that, Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird kind of pulled the comic, and have basically and had basically declared that the Image Ninja Turtle stuff was not canon. They then went back to self-publishing Ninja Turtles in the early 2000s. But then, if you once again check out my Kevin Eastman Peter Laird three-part episode episodes, sorry. Check that out, because I go into more depth and into it. But in the early 2000s, Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird, what happened was, Kevin Eastman by this point was super busy doing a bunch of other stuff. He was doing many other comic books. He had moved out because both of them had lived in the East Coast, over in Connecticut. But by the mid 90s, Kevin Eastman had moved out to the West Coast. He had bought a home in California, him and his wife, and they were living out there permanently. And then Kevin Eastman by this point had had a was actually now in charge of Heavy Metal magazine, was actually helping them not only develop the magazine, but was also helping to develop a new movie at the time. What happened was, he just didn't have the time to do Ninja Turtles anymore with Peter Laird. So Kevin Eastman basically, to be fair to Peter Laird, signed over all his rights to Peter Laird, and then Peter Laird basically became the sole owner of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And then what happened was Peter Laird decided to relaunch the comic in the early 2000s, and they started self-publishing again. And this basically was sort of a continuation of the original stuff that they had done in the 80s and into the early 90s before they had done the Image stuff. He had done that. He did that for several years. I think he did that for about 4 or 5 years before stopping it. And then he sold partial rights of the Ninja Turtles to Viacom, which is the parent company of Nickelodeon. And what happened was he sold the media rights to Ninja Turtles, which means that basically Nickelodeon owns all cartoon shows, all movies, all media pertaining to that. However, Peter Laird got to keep was he got to keep partial rights to the action figures. He got to keep a percentage of that. And then also he signed a deal which basically said that that he was allowed to actually do 18 Ninja Turtle comics a year, which basically meant that if he wanted to come out with Ninja Turtle comics, he could come out with them, even if, say, Nickelodeon was doing their own thing. But it was limited to 18 books a year. So that's what I'm saying is where I told you he sold him partial rights. And like I said, I cover this more in detail on my Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird, three-part saga. You know, I go over the length of their entire career. But like I said, but yeah, this has many universes which it had done. The Ninja Turtle comic once again got relaunched again, and they relaunched it in the fall of 2011. And it's actually been going ever since then. Now, one of the things they did that was very smart on their part was they weren't, like I said, by this point, Peter Laird had, had kind of backed off a bit from the Ninja Turtle stuff. But what happened was IDW got the license to print Ninja Turtle comics. IDW, rather than getting a completely whole new team, what they did was they couldn't get Peter Laird to help them out, so they actually went and by this point reached out to Kevin Eastman, who by this point was actually very interested in doing some Ninja Turtle stuff again. A lot of the other projects he'd been doing had been slowing down by this point, and he was ready to do some Ninja Turtle stuff again. So they got him to come in and help write and develop the stories, and even help a little bit out on the artwork. Kevin Eastman was also able to assemble a team of newer writers and artists to help him out on this new Ninja Turtle comic that was coming out. So it was good that they were able to reach out to one of the co-creators. And then eventually, because if you had been reading the Last Ronin stuff, he was able to come and get Peter Laird to come and help out again. So you've got both co-creators of the Ninja Turtles doing comic books again, which is freaking awesome. But as I said, yeah, it's crossed over into many different universes, you know. As I said, it unofficially crosses over into the Marvel universe, and I've explained why. It crossed over into the Image universe, albeit for a few years, but as I said, is no longer considered canon because both Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird did not like where a lot of the Image stuff took the characters. Like I said, it took it to some cool areas, but it did kind of ultimately ruin the continuity. So, if you can find any of that Image stuff, I mean, good luck to you because it actually is very rare these days. Because there have been no reprints and there have been no the only other stuff you can maybe find is if you go and say get some of the Savage Dragon trades, there they still have some of the crossover stuff within that. But other than that, you can't find the regular Ninja Turtle stuff from the Image years. And you might have to find individual issues, and sadly, I'm pretty sure that they have gone up in price. At least last time I checked, when I was looking for stuff online, they wanted a pretty hefty amount for it. But who knows? Maybe you just might luck out and find something for cheap. But either way, the Image continuity is considered unofficial these days. It used to be official, but now it's considered unofficial. Because I said they pretty much got rid of that continuity. The stuff that Peter Laird did in the early 2000s, which actually a lot of the 2003 Ninja Turtles cartoon series is actually based on, that is a little bit easier to find. I don't think they've ever collected it in any trades, which is kind of a shame, which I wish they would, but that's a little bit easier to find, and so it shouldn't be too hard to find that. But either way, but getting back on point, so the many different universes that it unofficially crosses over with the Marvel Universe. It used to officially cross over with the Image Universe, but now is unofficial. I said it's crossed over with the DC Universe as well. And as I pointed out, and spent the first majority of this episode talking about, it has crossed over into Usagi Yojimbo's universe many, many times. In fact, out of all the crossovers that the Ninja Turtles have been involved in, Usagi Yojimbo has been the thing it's crossed over with the most. But I can kind of understand why, to an extent, is really the fact that is those two are very similar in nature. One, they both deal with anthropomorphic animals that are involved in some kind of that basically have to have ties to each other in terms of cultural things, just in the fact that, the Ninja Turtles are ninjas. And Usagi Yojimbo is a samurai rabbit, So I mean, both ninjas and samurai share very similar histories. The only difference is that samurais were highly trained warriors who would work for either who would either work for a lord or the shogun. So they were, I guess, technically a little bit more official. And ninjas were shadow warriors who would work from the shadows and were much more into sort of assassination tactics and whatnot. But both were very highly trained, but and shared similar backgrounds. So I can kind of understand why Ninja Turtles crosses over with Usagi Yojimbo the most. But then also at the same time, like I said, they were much more familiar with the guy behind Usagi Yojimbo, which is Stan Sakai, because they were friends with him. They, you know, Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird, for many years have been friends with Stan Sakai. In fact, are still friends with Stan Sakai to this day. Like I said, not that they weren't friends with some of the other people that they've crossed over with, even with the DC stuff. But they're not as, they don't have the long history that they have with Stan Sakai. Stan Sakai, they've had a really long history with, so I understand why they frequently collaborate with him. You know, it like I said, it makes sense in terms of the backgrounds of the characters, but then it also makes sense because they've all been friends for many, many years. Like I said, I love the Ninja Turtles Batman crossover. But as I said, Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird are not as familiar with the DC guys as they are with Stan Sakai. You know, it's just, you know, and so that, so I, as I said, I totally understand why they frequently, frequently collaborate with each other. But anyway, but yeah, just, I just want to kind of talk about this because this was, something that I had, just been thinking about. And then, you know, and then maybe give you a little bit of history of some of these characters if you aren't familiar. Now, if you want a little bit more, in-depth stuff, as I said, I highly recommend that you listen to my history of Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird, and it's in three parts. So yes, it's a long, deep dive. You can listen to it. You know, maybe spread it out over several days, or you can try to binge listen to it. But I suggest that you set aside 3 hours for that, because each episode is an hour long. But either way, definitely check out my deep dive on Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird. You'll get a lot more detail. But tonight I just wanted to focus on a lot of the various crossovers and universes they've been involved with. So either way, definitely check those out if you can. Anyway, it's about time I got to my novel and comic book recommendations, so hey, let's get to that. In terms of novels, you know, there are many great things, that involve, ninjas, samurais, anything like that. One of my personal favorites, I'm going to recommend in terms of novels, Tales of the Samurai. Now, Tales of the Samurai is written by A.B. Mitford. I also recommend getting the illustrated edition. It's got this wonderful traditional Japanese artwork in it. So I highly recommend you check this out. And it's got many different stories that are based in Japanese mythology. It's got stories, it's got ghost stories, vampire stories, stories of renegade samurai, some of the stories include, this isn't everything, but some of the stories in here include things like, you got the story of the 47 Ronin, you got Kazuma's Revenge, the Ghost of Sakura, the Vampire Cat of Nibashima, and the Prince and the Badger. And these are just a few examples, either way, great stories. I highly recommend this, so check it out. It's Tales of the Samurai from A.B. Mitford. In terms of my comic book recommendations, you know, I'm going to recommend a few things. Simply because this episode dealt with crossovers, so I'm going to recommend a few different things. I'm going to recommend that you check out, there have been many different stories, but I definitely recommend that you check out pretty much all of the crossovers that they have done with Usagi Yojimbo, because they're very good, very well done, very well written. I definitely recommend the first Ninja Turtles Batman crossover. Now, I would recommend the sequels, but as I mentioned earlier, I have not read the sequels, so I'm not going to recommend something I have not read yet. I'm sure they're good, but I'm not going to be one of those people that recommends something that they've never read. So, but I do highly recommend that first Batman Ninja Turtles crossover. I highly recommend that. It's a great story. I'm also, and then I'm also going to recommend the early 2000s Ninja Turtles sort of reboot, which, as I said, is sort of a, it basically picks up where the original comic left off. And then, hey, as an honorable mention, I'm gonna say, just for historical context, because as I said, this does technically ruin a lot of the Ninja Turtle continuity, but if you are curious, I would, recommend checking out the Image Ninja Turtle stuff, because some of the early stuff is actually quite good. It's just when you get into the later stuff that they really start to mess around with continuity and the characters, and it just becomes this whole different book. By the end of it, it doesn't even resemble anything remotely similar to the Ninja Turtles that you know and love. But either way, I do recommend that you check that out at least. Like I said, but yeah, definitely check those all out. Highly recommend all of them. But the ones that I would recommend the most highly out of all of them, and I love them all, but this goes to the heart of crossovers to talk about. Definitely check out the Ninja Turtles Batman crossover, and just above all, the best out of all of them. Check out every single one of those Usagi Yojimbo Ninja Turtles crossovers, because those are actually some of the best crossovers I've seen. But as I said, it makes sense because all the creators are friends. Anyway, that's about it for tonight. Want to thank you all for tuning in, listening to me ramble on as I do. But we all know what this show is. But either way, I do want to thank each and every one of you who do listen to the show and at least get something out of it. With that being said, I hope you all have a wonderful evening, and I'll see you all again in the next episode.